everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It's episode number 139 for Friday, June 21st, 2013. It is a glorious day. It is a glorious day because we are here, because you are here, and because we're actually doing a podcast, which it kind of feels like it's been a little while. It's the first time doing a video podcast in a little while. So it's good to be back. You guys in the chat room, thank you. You guys watching live, cool. You guys listening at home later without video, that's all right too, I guess. We still like you. We got a bunch of guys with us. Alex Dobie in England.
Hey, everyone.
Jared Hildenbrand in West Virginia.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Andrew Martonic somewhere. And where are you? Seattle. Seattle.
Yep. Sunny Seattle.
Yeah, not really.
No, it's actually all right right now.
Oh, okay.
It'll change by the end of the podcast. It'll be gross, but.
Right. Yeah, we've been raining off. And we're in that point in Florida where it'll just like pour from the heavens for an hour and then it's beautiful now. It's really nice. In fact, screw it. Let's not do a podcast. Let's go outside and play. No, let's do a podcast. We got so much stuff to talk about. Actually, Alex has a whole lot of stuff to talk about because he's the only one who's seen this stuff. You were in London. Actually, you were in London for a good part of the week. Do you want to do the boring stuff first?
If by the boring stuff you mean the Huawei Ascend P6, then I will do the boring stuff. After kind of teasing it and half announcing it and hinting at it, we got the Ascend P6 new kind of iPhone-ish looking device from Huawei. Metal body, very, very thin, I think 6.18 millimeters. They're claiming it's the thinnest smartphone in the world, which is something I don't particularly care about, but more importantly, it has a very nice-looking design. They've really stepped up the design in terms of the hardware. Since we last saw, I think the last major Huawei phone we saw was the Ascend P2, that was MWC. So it's a big step up in design for them. They've got some interesting new stuff on the software side as well. They've got a new Emotion UI. I'm not hugely keen on the way it looks, but the performance has been stepped up a lot. They're using, of course, their own custom quad-core CPU. They're keen to tell us how many thousands of skins they have waiting for this UI online. That's kind of a big deal for them as well.
Actually, it is kind of a big deal because that's one of those things that most phones can't do unless you root it and just hack it all to hell, right?
And HTC used to do that with some of their stuff a while back, but we've seen a lot of manufacturers step away from that and go with more of like a, you know, coherent overall design language for all their phones. So, it's nice. I think it's the nicest looking Huawei device by a long way. There are a few compromises you have to make. It's not quite as high spec as the P2. You don't get LTE yet. There'll be an LTE version at some point in the future, they were saying. And Huawei's in this bit of a weird spot now where you can either get the really nice design, the P6, or you can get the high performance in LTE in the P2. So there are a few compromises you've got to make there, but I think on the whole, they're making progress, and you can't deny that they're putting out some really high-quality hardware on the P6.
Now, I guess it should be said that we probably won't see this in the States. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell Huawei in the States these days. But
yeah, for obvious reasons. Yeah. It's more likely to appear in Europe. I think they've got Carphone Warehouse on board in the UK, which is one of the big independent phone retailers over here. Asian availability, obviously, it's Huawei is a big Chinese manufacturer. You can expect it to appear in China. Not US-centric, but I think we're going to see Huawei certainly making inroads into Europe with devices like this.
Cool. So that was the boring stuff, and I don't mean to say boring because it's really not boring, but it's not the super crazy stuff that we had on Thursday.
No.
So you and Richard were back at Earl's Court, which is where we had the Galaxy S3. Earl's Court 2? There's a second one?
There's a second one around the back. We didn't know this, but yeah, we're
Earl's Court 2.
Big venue that they had for the Galaxy S3 launch. It was the same complex, but slightly smaller, a bit more sort of intimate. Still lots of people there. We had tons and tons of announcements, both on the Android and the Windows side. We had the three Galaxy S4 devices that had already been announced, I think one each week for the past 3 or 4 weeks. Galaxy S4 Mini, Galaxy S4 Active, Galaxy S4 Zoom. Obviously, the Galaxy family is a big sort of range of devices for them. Now they're turning the Galaxy S4 name into this sort of subcategory of hero devices, if that makes sense. For better or worse, that's what they're doing. You've got the Mini, which is arguably, you could say the S4 name isn't really you know, fairly used there. It's a mid-range Samsung phone, right? You get a lot of the features, or not all of the features. You don't get multi-window, some of the fancier stuff. You get a lower res screen, a smaller screen, a slower CPU, a lower megapixel camera. So it's their leading mid-range phone, but it is still a mid-range phone. It's nothing particularly exciting about that. And the pre-order prices in the UK are looking pretty insane. So I think I was posting on G Plus about this before, that I'm really not too interested in the Mini until they lower the price.
It was funny. I mean, look, the thing's called the Mini, and honestly, I got confused when I was helping process the pictures. when we say Mini, it's what, 4.3 inches, which is not Mini.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's not small.
Apple's biggest phone is 4 inches.
Right. In fact, we went back and looked. And, I say we went back and looked now, I don't remember. The first Mini phones I remember seeing was my very first year going to Mobile World Congress in Spain when we had the Xperia Mini, right? I think is what it was called.
X10 or X8 Mini at that point, I think.
X10, yeah, right, right. Yeah. And it was, I almost want to say 2.5 inches, but that's not right.
3.2.
Probably.
It was tiny.
Yeah, probably no more than, you know, 3-ish. And that was tiny. That was a Mini phone. This is normal, and they're calling it the Mini. So, I mean, keep that in mind, right?
It's Mini compared to a 5-inch phone, but I mean, it's all relative when you're talking about these things, isn't
right.
it?
Right.
Still, it's a little Samsung phone. It looks like the Galaxy S4. Big deal.
Yeah. Galaxy S4 Active. I've got one waiting for me. I need to go pick it up, actually. Can we quite call it rugged? Is it a rugged phone?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it qualifies as rugged. I don't know if you remember the Galaxy, what was it called? I think we did a hands-on with it at MWC, Phil. I won't blame you if you don't, because we spent all of about 2 minutes with it. But it has kind of a similar design to that. It's got a different style of plastic around the outside. It's very kind of grippy. You got physical buttons instead of capacitive buttons. It still looks from the front a lot like a Galaxy S4, though. So it's got a lot of the same internals, the same Snapdragon 600, 2 gigs of RAM, whatever. 1080p screen, which is actually an LCD this time. Not exactly sure why that is, but in theory, with an LCD, you do get better daylight visibility. So if you're selling this phone to sort of outdoorsy people, then that is going to be probably better than the AMOLED. Obviously it's water resistant, dust resistant, it's rated IP67, for whatever that's worth. And it's nice. It's nice to, I think, have a ruggedized phone like this that's water resistant that isn't just full of mid-range hardware like a lot of the competitors are.
Agreed.
And I think they're branding it properly as an active phone rather than for construction workers like a lot of ruggedized phones are. You know, they're just saying you want a Galaxy S4, but you want something that's, you know, slightly more active where you're not going to have to put like the OtterBox case on it when you, you know, go hiking for the day or night or something like that and not have to worry about it as much. You know, they're not saying that you can hit it with a hammer.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to drive a Jeep over it.
Right. And that's the danger of using the word rugged. Rugged to Andrew in Seattle may be a whole different world of rugged from some hillbilly in West Virginia. I mean, to me, rugged, oh, hell, I drove over it with my truck. And it still works. And that's, you know, it's not going to happen.
I think we're going to have to wait until we have these in hand. The only test they were really doing in London yesterday, I'm not sure. I think Andrew Varka had a chance to play with it in New York. But the only test they were doing in London were they were dropping in a pool of water and they were saying, hey, look, the phone still works. So we'll have to wait and spend more
time. Yeah, you need to be careful. I was thinking about that as I was driving through the rain today, because they always say, and I love this line where they say, hey, it can stay submerged at 1 meter for up to half an hour, right? If you have your phone underwater 1 meter, and I don't know how big, it's like this big, right? We don't do meter. I'm kidding. I know how big a meter is. But I mean, you're not going to go swimming with this thing and not notice it for half an hour.
No,
right?
And they said that on stage yesterday.
Yeah.
They said, you're not going to be able to go scuba diving with this thing. And they were kind of, they're almost pretty candid in a way, a lot of the limitations of these phones, which is interesting to see from Samsung.
Right.
But good. That's the way that needs to be advertised. Truthfully.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get to this in a minute, but another one of the really candid things they came out with, which was, kind of brushed away very quickly was they said they've released a lot of Windows RT tablets last year and they haven't been very successful, so they're ditching RT. So interesting to see that with a kind of European-centric presentation that they're talking about that kind of stuff.
Finally, the big guys, the cameras.
Yes, mm-hmm. The Zoom and the NX. I guess the Zoom, we're already kind of familiar with that. It's already been announced. It's basically a Galaxy S Mini crossed with a Galaxy camera.
Bring it on. Bring it on.
Yeah. So I'm still in two minds about this thing. It's and it's difficult to get an idea of how comfortable it's going to be to hold because they have these big bulky security devices attached to them. You can't really get an idea of, you can't put it in your pocket. You can't really use it as a phone. So I think we'll be waiting with that one as well to see whether it actually works as a phone and whether it's actually pocketable and how easy day to day use is and how much you sacrifice for having this big bulky zoom lens on the back.
Which one are you more excited about? In that or the?
The NX. The NX.
The NX is really what you care about.
Yeah, because people have done camera phones before. I think there was I forget the model number. There was a Nokia phone that did optical zoom a few years back. There are going to be a lot of camera-centric phones this year. Sony's got one in the works. Nokia's got the EOS. They work different ways, but still, it's similar kind of idea. The NX, I think, is going to be a really game-changing kind of device. It's basically, it's an NX20 with Android on the back. You have a professional-quality camera that's a massive step up from the previous Galaxy camera with all the same kind of sharing stuff and on-device editing and the big screen on the back. I think that's going to be a big deal.
We talked about it last week, and my big concern was was that giant display, right? I mean, are you worried about that now, or
I don't know. I mean, I've in the stuff I do for AC, I've never really used a camera that big for any length of time, right. So I don't know. what do you guys think? I mean, you guys all use DSLRs, so.
I treat my camera like a baby.
Hey, hang on a sec. I can't hear Andrew at all. What's going on? And it just got worse. And even worse. Is anybody there?
I can hear him.
I can hear him just fine.
Yeah.
I can hear everyone just fine.
Okay. Continue then.
Well, I was just going to say that I treat my camera like a baby. And keep it in a camera case, and I don't keep it slung around my neck and swinging around everywhere anyways, so the fact that the screen's going to be an inch and a half larger than your average modern micro four thirds size screen isn't bothersome to me at all, and you get so much more functionality out of having the bigger screen.
I'm just saying, when somebody cracks their screen, don't come crying to me, because
I think you, like we were saying last week, you'll crack the lens before you'll crack the screen. I know the lens, of course, is interchangeable. That's a big selling point for that. But at the same time, you could argue the lens is probably going to be, they're not going to be cheap to replace, just like the body isn't.
Right. Well, that's true.
So, I'm not sure. I kind of argued around in the corner there. I'm not sure where we've ended up.
How was the software? Because that's the other big question. Are you able to, and again, you haven't been a big DSLR user, but are you able to switch settings, with what I have here? I've got buttons on the front that I can turn and, another thumb wheel on the back. So I can easily go through all the settings while I'm shooting stuff without having to stop and look at a screen and stop what I'm doing. Can you do that with this?
There are dials on the top side of it. Okay. I didn't get a whole lot of chance to play with that in this setup in London. I'm sure you can be able to do that if you want to. It's that there are dials on the top to let you do that. The stuff on the screen, I think the big thing with the touch interface, and it was one of my main gripes with the Galaxy camera, it was kind of slow. There was this inexplicable lag when you were using it in camera mode. The camera app would it was like there was some kind of delay between the smartphone components and it actually interfacing with the whole camera side of things. That's completely gone now, and it was very, very slick. The whole software side was very smooth, and a lot of
parts of the camera app have actually been tweaked. So you can actually get into the Android side of it by swiping to the right. There's an on-screen wheel which has more options now, smoother to scroll, and is a lot easier to use.
Cool. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know what it is that's... Some about it just scares me. I don't know what.
I think it's new. There's really been no device like this before, and people have tried to make professional quality cameras with Android on, and we've seen, you know, efforts from Polaroid and other people. But I think, yeah, this is going to be a first. It's going to be interesting to see how it performs. It's not going to be perfect, just like the Galaxy camera wasn't perfect. But you know, you move forward in these things through iterative, non-perfect devices.
So I'm not extremely up to date with Samsung's current line of NX cameras, but I just want to make sure that there's no hit in image quality whatsoever by having the Galaxy part on it. You know, you still want to be able to do everything you could with the NX line of cameras. And, you know, there needs to be no compromise here, and I know that that's really hard considering they're doing something new and it's the first thing in its class. But you become less okay with those kind of compromises when you're spending probably $1,000, $1,500 with a kit lens for this thing. It's not going to be something you're willing to deal with like you would on the S4 Zoom.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and I think that's something they will have taken into account. If you look at the hardware and the sensor, it's essentially an NX20.
Right. It looks like it should, you know, it looks like they've taken the right steps, but I guess we'll have to take some test photos and see.
I don't know if anyone on staff has an NX20, but it'd be interesting to stick them side by side and see if, like you say, there is any difference in image quality.
What did you use before, Alex? Didn't you have?
Before?
Yeah, didn't you have a Sony camera? Oh, no, you had Sony, sorry.
I have a Sony camera now. I have the RX100.
Yeah, no, I have that too. I thought you had a Samsung or something before. Guess not.
I had the Galaxy camera, which... right.
Which you broke.
Ended up dying. Yeah. Well, which someone else broke by falling through a table at the HTC One launch event, yeah.
Excuses.
And
tell me about this weird convertible tablet. So it's half Android, half Windows...
It isn't really. I mean, it kind of seemed like that when they showed it on stage. This is the Samsung Ative Q. It's almost like an Asus device, right? In the way that it's kind of spans lots of different device categories. So it's a tablet. You can fold it out. You have this sort of fold out keyboard, and the supporting hinge that attaches the keyboard to the screen is actually where all the components live. So they were saying that means that the keyboard can be really thin, and it doesn't mean that. You know, you can type on it without the screen getting or the keyboard getting hot. So it's basically a Windows device. So it's full Windows 8, and Android runs. I think they were saying it's deeply integrated and it's kind of virtualized. So it's not like the Asus Trio, which was announced a few weeks back, which is actually an Android tablet and a Windows laptop. They're doing it differently. So everything runs on Windows, and Android is effectively an app within Windows, and they're virtualizing everything.
That sounds stable.
Well, there were issues, and obviously the hardware and software there was pre-production, but and I guess the other thing we should mention has a crazy, crazy screen, 3200 by 1800, looks absolutely gorgeous. But part of the problem with that is Android is nowhere near ready for that screen resolution. So, for example, Chrome, you have weird jaggies around some of the curved parts of the screen. Performance, it was decent, but there was a little bit of noticeable lag. So it's not going to be the same as running Android on, like Android running natively on the hardware, even if it is running through Intel's own virtualization stuff.
Right. So because they're doing all kinds of weird integration and virtualization, how is this going to be any better than just having a Windows tablet and running something like BlueStacks to have Android apps?
I suspect that's exactly what they're doing.
Oh, you think they're
going to be doing something like that. It's Dual OS, I think it's called, is just a live tile you can click on that launches into Android. The other interesting thing is you can actually, when you have a Dual OS enabled, and I guess it's running in the background, you can tap the Windows button on the underneath the screen. Tap it once to get to live tiles. Tap it again when you're at the start screen, and it'll flip from the start screen into Android. Which the first few times you use it is just confusing as hell. You press Windows once, and then you press Windows again, and suddenly you're in Android, and you're in Android, but you press the Windows button.
That's just wrong.
Yeah,
that's the one thing I
wonky implementation.
That's the one thing I took away from the video was the guy's like, here, you can push this button to get to Android, and here you can push this button to get to Android. Oh, here's a third button you can use to get to Android. It happens to look like the Windows button. I'm like, what? And we had 100 things going on at once, so I was only half paying attention. I went back and looked last night, and it's just, what?
Yeah, we had a Samsung guy do a demonstration for us because it was kind of confusing, right? I think if you buy this, you want to be buying it because you want a Windows device in that form factor, not because you want Android.
Should we even call it a tablet that runs Android?
It's a tablet that runs Android, but I would make the distinction that it isn't an Android tablet.
Right, right. That's what I meant. Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Do we have pricing on any of this stuff?
Not to hand. I think certainly it wasn't in any of the initial press stuff, and you know the US and Europe is going to be different anyway. So nothing solid on that.
Hmm. One arm and one leg, a finger is your change.
Well, the NX Pro is not going to be cheap, right?
No,
it's going to be probably minimum $1,000.
Yeah.
The new Windows stuff is all Haswell based, so that's probably not going to be terribly expensive.
By the way, I'm a fan of Haswell. I picked up a new MacBook Air, and I approve. Just saying.
Cool.
Since you asked. So yeah, right. Alex had a kind of a busy week.
I just took a real quick look, and the list price for the NX20, the old model that's not Android, is $1,099.
Body or with a kit?
That's with the kit.
Still not cheap.
But right. So it's going to be at least that. Samsung may have realized that, you know, it's time to rein in some prices on their cameras like they are trying to do on their phones, but it's still going to be at least $1,000.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Samsung's getting the place now where they realize that they're getting to be they've always been a big brand, but getting to be a much bigger brand in tech and in mobile tech in particular. A lot of the pre-order prices we're seeing in Europe for devices like the S4 Mini are way higher than you would expect based on the hardware. So I don't know. I'm not holding out for it any of this stuff that's just been announced being particularly affordable.
Speaking of pictures, you know what all this is? Actually, let's back up. The one kind of badass feature of the NX is the connectivity, right? Full LTE, full Wi-Fi, yep. So you're going to be sharing the stuff faster than ever before. I'm still not convinced on that. We'll see.
Well, what is it? Isn't it like 20 megapixel, 20.3 or something?
Yeah.
What's that going to do to your data cap?
I'll tell you what it's going to do. Well, question. Is it exporting at full res? I'm willing to bet it doesn't.
Well, probably whatever you said it.
Yeah.
I think the idea will be the expectation will be that if you're sharing over LTE, you'll be using something on the phone or whether it's a third party app or whatever to downsize it before you do.
Okay, so I'll be able to upload, say, to Instagram faster. Segway.
Yes.
And Instagram this week launched Vine video. They ripped off Vine. Let's just say that, right? So they you now have video in stream of Instagram, 15 seconds. You can do some basic editing and chop out sections, and you can put filters on it. Supposedly has stabilization, but I've seen a lot of really crappy ones so far. So I forget. I wish I remembered who I saw mention it on Twitter yesterday. But somebody mentioned that it was interesting. The demos they all showed were not square videos. They were not the same aspect ratio as what you get when you actually do video on Instagram. So not sure what was up there, but I've seen some really shaky ones. Where do you guys stand on this? Do you care that Instagram does video? Did you care in the first place about Instagram? Is this, I don't know.
I'm banned. I'm still banned from Instagram, so I don't know.
I want to think there's potential there, but video is just, I mean, we all deal in videos and photos when we go to events. We all know that video is harder to do right than still images. It takes more time. It takes more, more focus. So I don't know. I think you're asking a lot of the average person with a smartphone to get them making good looking videos, and you have to give them a lot of software to support to let them do that. So I think it'll be a few versions down the line before we can properly judge this. But well, I'm not too optimistic.
I think I can agree with that. This is where I think the HTC is knocking it out of the park with things like Zoe's and highlights, because it's all just done automatically and it looks generally pretty good. And it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. And I think the average person that can make a good looking image in Instagram probably isn't going to be able to produce 15 seconds of good video. And that's not necessarily something that's their fault. It's that they're just holding a phone, and, you know, it takes a lot of time and, you know, more time than people want to put into it to make an Instagram video. So
I mean, let's just kind of back up and go into what's actually involved with sort of creating stuff, because my big problem with Vine was that it had the world's worst video editing interface. I mean, we're all used to using stuff like iMovie or Adobe Premiere or whatever. Going to something where you have to hold the screen and then kind of point it and then release and then go somewhere else and shoot your next few seconds, that just was really hard for me to wrap my head around. So do you guys think that the new thing is going to be any better, or are we going to be running into the same kind of issues?
It's
Instagram video lets you scrub back one cut at a time,
right?
Delete.
That's good. I mean, look, you're dealing with filters here too, right? Which isn't good. I think Vine can be. You know, I've seen people do interesting things with Vine. I've seen a lot of people, a lot of organizations do crappy things with Vine. Go back to last week. What was it? Verizon announced some app, and I forget what it was, or some service or something, and they did their demo video on Vine. It was shaky. It was out of foot. It was horrible. There's no reason why a company should be announcing something with a Vine video. but that also brings up one of the big differences between Vine and Instagram, and that is you cannot embed an Instagram video yet. I have a feeling that'll change at some point. So you're stuck in the apps. That's a big, big difference between the two. I have no doubt we're going to see some good stuff. It's going to take a little while. I actually think they just killed Vine. I do. As a service, Instagram has the power of Facebook behind them. They have the ecosystem already there. They already have the users, and they have a lot of really good users. So I think Vine is history. I say this 24 hours in. I think I agree with the people who are saying, and I think I'm one of them, who says that this is going to pollute the Instagram stream a little bit. This serene, easy to watch thing with these one by one images that are, you know, real easy to look at and understand. And it's suddenly noisy and loud. And I did kind of a flippant post today of like the most important new option that Instagram has added to the app, and that is the ability to turn off the autoplay, which actually makes the app run a lot smoother. So if you haven't tried that, I recommend it. Especially if you're using the HTC One, which is loud as hell. And you don't want that stuff autoplaying when you're in bed next to your wife at midnight. I'll just say that from experience. Yeah.
I mean, you know what I can't help but think about all these services?
What's that?
Our phones already had a video camera that I can stop at 6 seconds if I wanted to. Or I can go 11 seconds or a minute and 5 seconds. I don't... And on Android, it's still just one click and you share it to YouTube. I get the social part of like Vine and Instagram, but I don't see where these apps fit in or how they got so popular. But maybe that's just me.
I use Instagram when I'm lazy, when I want to share the same picture to Facebook and to Twitter at the same time, because I can do it with that. And it does it, you know, relatively well. Yeah, there are other ways to do it, but for me, that's just a no-brainer, easy one, right? If I want to, Foursquare. So I use it out of laziness sometimes. But look, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of good stuff on Instagram. I think it's a really interesting service. Our friend Martin Reich, Safe Solvent, If you haven't seen him on Instagram, really good stuff. You know, a lot of really good photographers out there. And maybe we're all just getting biased here because it's a very much a Me Too play from Instagram and Facebook, which is kind of Facebook's mo these days. I don't know.
But it's good we all have different opinions and we question all this stuff. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily have to figure it out. If you like it, use the hell out of it.
I think the interesting thing is going to be whether it actually draws people away from just casually firing up Instagram and scrolling through. Whether, like we're saying, the noise, whether that actually turns people off towards using it.
Turn off autoplay.
Or there's going to be in the future some kind of way to filter that down so you can only look at photos if you want, or you have a separate thing for videos, or it's all tapped away or whatever.
Right.
Well, that's a good thought. That's that they should, put that in the settings where you can filter out the videos. A lot of people don't like change, and
sure. They'll
be happy if they can get rid of that.
Mm. But like I was saying, if it is a Me Too product, are they really sure why they're making it beyond the fact that they just need to kill Vine? And I'm not sure they do.
And that, well, look, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad strategy. You know, just kill them to watch them die. But what else? Some actually kind of big NVIDIA news this week. So first off, they've lowered the price of Shield from $350 to $300, $299. And it will be available, I assume. I don't know if it's going to hit doorsteps on the 27th or start shipping on the 27th. I forget which, but available June 27. That's next week. It's 6 days from today. Kind of a big deal. It's good it's finally coming.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear what other people think about this thing. I still like it a lot as a product. I think it's really well done. But I want to hear what other people think because I know what I think. I want to hear other opinions that are not mine.
So am I right in thinking this is the first actual shipping product with Tegra 4 in it? I don't think we've had anything else, have we?
What about those tablets that got announced a couple weeks ago? I can't remember.
I don't think they're out there yet.
No?
Okay. I think a lot of those had really late shipping dates.
Okay.
Mm.
Cool.
And it would make sense that NVIDIA's device has that chip in it first, I guess.
Right. The other big news out of there was that they're going to start licensing their GPU technology.
Yep.
And patents.
That's huge.
Yeah, Jerry, can you dive into that a little more for me?
Well, it's right now you get, let's say, we'll use Qualcomm as an example. Samsung pretty much, you know, does what's best for Samsung. Well, you know, like any other company, I guess it's tangent. I'll go off on another place. But Qualcomm uses, a certain vendor's, I don't want to mention any vendors, they use a certain vendor's GPU in their system on a chip when they release a Snapdragon. What they can do now is they can take NVIDIA's technology and pump it into, you know, a custom GPU or maybe even partner with NVIDIA and put a Kepler GPU on that Snapdragon chip, which I'm not saying one is better than the other, but that saves a whole lot of money, production time, and engineering costs. And, you know, it's definitely good enough. We're to the point with our smartphones that the hardware is good enough to do anything we'll need to do in the next 5 years. We still like to advance it, but it's good enough now if we optimize things. So what you're going to be able to do is in Qualcomm is the example, they're going to be able to beef up their offerings with a whole lot less out front engineering costs of their own just by paying some licensing fees.
So what's NVIDIA's angle behind this? Because you could argue that they're less relevant in the phone CPU space now than they were last year or even the year before. Mm-hmm. Is this their way of getting a slice of the smartphone chip pie without actually having their own phone chip out there? Because, of course, we're not expecting Tegra 4i until next year.
I think that's the deal. I mean,
yeah. They're
making money without having to get their chip in a phone.
So when I read their original press release or their blog post, it's a nice long post, and they're basically framing this as, we realize we're not going to be able to hit every price point with our GPUs. You know, we have Tegra 4 as our smartphone tablet platform, and we're pegging it at kind of this price level. we want everybody, you know, higher than that and lower than that to have access to our GPUs. And they know that they can't scale to meet all of those price points. So it's easier and, you know, more profitable for them because, you know, they'd take some money over no money to just license it out and let somebody else use it. And those people, like Jerry said, like Qualcomm or somebody else, they don't have to worry about the NVIDIA branding. They don't have to worry about partnering in any weird way. They can just take the intellectual property and do with it what they want. And then, you know, everybody kind of wins in that situation, including the end consumer that just gets a better GPU without having to care about it.
Yeah, and it certainly is. You know, devices move forward in terms of graphical power and move more into the territory of where consoles have been in the past. Yeah, that's one thing NVIDIA knows really, really well. NVIDIA, if you don't know, was a graphics card and GPU company before it ever moved into anything beyond that. So it's the one thing they know really, really well.
It's been interesting watching NVIDIA during this whole Tegra 4 run-up. I think they've done a really good job in their marketing and PR over the last year or so, just in the way they're doing things, the way they're getting messages out, and as many different ways as they're getting their message out. We're not rewriting every blog post NVIDIA does, and we're not going to, but I see a lot of people doing that. That means NVIDIA's doing their job. And they're hitting all the right buttons between announcing Tegra 4 at CES and then showing us a little more of the inside, you know, enough to get us to do, you know, a post or two or three. And I thought they were interesting posts, in Mobile World Congress. And then again at, do we do something else at CTIA? Yes. Where was that? Vegas. Yes. So we got something else out of CTIA from them. Actually, I don't think we did any posts at a CTIA, but we went and met them and they showed us more stuff. But again, other people did these posts where they showed us it running on AT&T's LTE network. And hey, Tegra 4i is coming along thusly. And they're really walking us through the process. And it's been interesting for me to see because I don't necessarily understand it all and I'm learning right along with everybody else. But I mean, they're really doing a good job on that marketing message.
I think one thing great they did with their marketing that just we haven't seen from anybody else was with the Shield. It's never a wise idea to announce a product 4 months before you're going to sell it, or in this case, 6 months. But they used that 6 months well.
Right.
They E3, Google I.O., CTIA, they had the Shield everywhere.
Yeah.
And they wanted you to come up and play with it. You walk by, they would call you over, have you play with it, and then ask you questions about, you know, how did you like this? How did you like that? And then they kept tweaking it until they released, you know, their final version of the product that has crowdsourced data for 6 months to make it better.
And it's a pretty...
That's genius.
It's a pretty big change from what we saw in January to what's coming out next week.
And it's interesting to see that back in January, we were all thinking that, you know, that it's going to be $500 and they're never going to hit the Q2 target that they're aiming for, right. And yet here we are, end of Q2, it's coming out next week, and it's going to be $299.
I stood there in their offices and I said, guys, I was wrong. Thought it was going to be more expensive and later, so you know, kudos. So yeah, I'm real curious to see what everybody else has to say when we start getting these into new hands. Yep. And yes, by the way, we're going to give some away. I've already pre-ordered two, so stay tuned. Stay tuned for that. Maybe we'll do that next week and get it going before the 27th. In fact, we will definitely do that. Break exclusive. You heard it here first, boys and girls. What else? Optimus G successor will use Snapdragon 800 processors. NVIDIA, LG and Qualcomm announced that this week. And then the next day, LG gave us a date. So August 7th, they're doing an event in New York City. We will be there, of course. So cool. I mean, all right. It'll be another phone. Don't know too much about that.
It's natural progression. Everybody's excited, and I'm excited too, but this we should have expected this, and we have.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we're all on the same page. We're all expecting the Optimus G2, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Or whatever they
whatever
name
they
it.
Call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
They said it'll be G2, the next in the Optimus line is what they said.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting. Like if LG is the Nexus partner this year, if you buy into those rumors, then what we see on August 7th could be in some way, shape, or form the hardware that's powering the next Nexus device.
Maybe.
You're going to make me need a drink if you keep that up.
Well, you know, it could happen.
Yes, it could. And that's exactly what happened last year. The best internal hardware available at the time actually went into the Nexus for once.
Yeah.
First time. Yeah.
That happens
so
2 years
see.
In
it,
a row.
It could happen. It might not.
Let's talk about the HTC Butterfly S. So this was, it wasn't announced for, you know, what country? Was it Taiwan or China?
Taiwan.
Was it just Taiwan? All right. So they announced it for Taiwan. It's basically, I mean, take the Butterfly from last year, put some HTC One stuff in it, and that's what you got here, right? And it's 5 inches, so it's a little bigger. There was some back and forth, and people started getting me to maybe rethink things. So in the post I said, you know, this probably won't be coming to the U.S. in any way, shape, or form. Not in any way, shape, or form. But, I mean, as the Butterfly S, you probably won't see it here, just like we didn't get the Butterfly. But we did get the DNA on Verizon. I don't think...
Well, would Verizon do this and the HTC One?
I don't know, and that's the question. That's what has me kind of going back on what I wrote a little bit, or at least rethinking it. Because... I have to be careful what I say.
If like expanding things out, you could easily see them doing, you know, the next level of a Droid DNA device with the Butterfly, and then if they felt like giving HTC the reins, letting them use the One branding on next to it.
I'm a little torn between.
No, bad.
Yeah, I'm torn between some of the stuff that I was told months ago that might or might not be true anymore, just because things change. So right now what I'm going on is Verizon has announced that it's going to have the HTC One. So that's what I'm working under, that Verizon's going to have the HTC One like everybody else has, right? But maybe they won't. Maybe it will be different. I don't know.
I think what's more likely is that originally Verizon was going to get this device, and they just said, screw it, HTC's already put a load of marketing money behind the HTC One name. It's better if we have that device rather than continuing the DNA, which is going to be old by that point.
That could well be.
Or Verizon gets the HTC One, and in 6 months they get the DNA too.
Right. You got to remember that Verizon just kicked up their Droid marketing engine, Droid Land.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
That's got to be Motorola.
Yeah, that's
Hey, I heard an interesting Droid X thing this week. You want to hear it?
Yes.
So I don't have any secondary information here. I got to pull it up real quick. I don't have any secondary information. I don't have any confirmation, but... interesting, and it wouldn't surprise me. Come on, email, open up. Where did you go? So, three phones, the Droid Ultra, Droid Ultra Max, and the Droid Ultra Mini. A couple of them are 5 inches, and the Mini is 4.3. Again, a 4.3-inch Mini phone. Don't get me started on that. Very, not rugged, but very sturdy. Three layers of glass, unibody chassis, and a Kevlar back. Gorilla Glass 3, not a whole lot of bezel, and the Ultra, but not the Max, is thinner than the original Razr. That's all I got. Interesting, this is from somebody I met, actually, and have talked to, at least, so I can put a face to the email. I don't know, interesting, I guess.
Sounds plausible.
Yeah, very plausible. Sure, I mean,
Motorola made no bones about letting the world know they have plenty of devices.
Oh, yeah.
And it would mirror what they had last year with the Razr M, you know, the Razr HD and the Razr HD Max.
Yeah, so kind of not a whole lot of, you know, unexpected rumorage there. And again, totally unconfirmed, totally unannounced. I'm just spinning it out here so we have something to talk about, I guess. Yeah, cool. We'll see.
But let's just hope Motorola, the people that are still there that were there before, have learned from their errors in the past, and I think they have, and I think they're just going to knock it out of the freaking park this year. I am excited for Motorola in, you know, the end of 2013.
And I'm hoping that they keep up their push in Europe as well. They had the Razr I came out of here last year, and we really had nothing from them since then. So
yeah,
hopefully it's not just going to be the US, although realistically it probably will just be the US, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say about Moto. I, you know, you guys know how I feel about rumors and stuff like that. especially when it comes to this. Like, a lot of what we heard is just not unexpected, right? It's just, eventually, come on, I want a phone. I'm ready to hear what they're working on. And it kind of, especially when you go back to, like, what Larry Page was saying, like, you should be able to drop your phone and it just not shatter, right?
And not worrying about having to charge it.
Right. That, to me, that's the bigger stuff. That's what's really going to be interesting.
And you'd imagine that whatever they have coming out on Verizon is going to have the crazy new battery, you know, the chip that manages the efficiency of that on board. The stuff from the X phone that they were talking about last month.
Right.
Huge failure if it doesn't. I mean,
yeah.
Here in the US, and Alex, I know you understand, but other people maybe outside the US that are listening, Verizon is key for the Android market here in the US. Yeah. We don't necessarily have to like it, but they are. If you please Verizon and Verizon's users, you've got a great head start on success in the United States.
Hey, you want to hear some interesting stats, as long as we're talking about it?
Yes.
I've been playing a lot in the Android Developer Console for our app, and it's really good. Renee and I were talking the other night, Renee Ritchie from iMore. He was showing me what you get for iOS, and God, Android's is so much better. It's incredible. I thought we had carriers. Did it not do carriers? I thought it did. Where did I see it? Yeah, carrier. Sure. There it is. Yeah. All right. So, I'm not going to say exactly how many installs we have, but it's more than 50,000 because you can tell that on the market. But 14% of the installations are on Verizon. 11.5%, almost 14.5%. 11.5% on AT&T. Almost 9% on Sprint. 6.66%. Oh, wait, that's right. 6.66% on T-Mobile. That's the devil's carrier, by the way. Just saying. EE has a little less than 2%. O2, 1.78. 3, 1.6. Vodafone, a little more than 1%. Rogers, a little more than 1%. So that's kind of interesting. And then 50% other. I'm not quite sure how that works out. So obviously something's probably being reported funny. So that's interesting, I think.
Yeah, it is.
You want to know top devices, as long as I'm looking at this?
Yes,
this
sure
might surprise you. What do you think? And if you know the answer, don't say it. I think Jerry knows.
I know, so okay. I'll shut up.
Alex, what do you think the top device is?
That's an interesting one. Maybe the original Razer?
Andrew, what do you think?
I'm going to say Galaxy S2.
Ooh, no! I was going to say Galaxy S2.
You were both wrong. Jerry, what's the answer?
The Nexus 7.
Yeah. Ah.
Interesting.
Not grossly so. It's right at 8%. Nexus 4 is number 2 with 7.8%. Wow. And again, this is what's being reported. You know, there's 58%.
Do we know if it's counting like different carrier variants of...
Yes, actually we do. We do, because number 3 is the M7, is the HTC One. It's 6%. And then 4 and 5 are two different versions of the Galaxy S3, and I don't remember which version is which offhand. I'd have to go look. And then you have two versions of the Galaxy S4 after that, one of which, I forget which one's JFLTE. Is that Sprint or Timo? I don't remember.
It depends what the last two letters are.
Yeah. T-Mobile, I guess. And then AT&T, then one of the Galaxy S3s, then the Verizon S4. So that's interesting. It's been fun to see. It's been fun to see what everybody out there is using on our app.
It's interesting to see the N7 up there.
It really is.
Didn't expect that.
Yeah.
The Nexus 7 is a great way to surf the internet.
Yeah, it is.
So it makes sense, I guess.
So if you haven't downloaded our app, here's my weekly plug. Go do it. We released version 1.25 this week. Really good stuff. We've got a dark widget now. So much more good stuff on the roadmap that we're working on. Really enjoying working with the developers, so it's good stuff. Are you guys using it? Are you liking it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you tell me if you weren't?
Yeah, yes, I would. Well, you know me. I every day. But it's faster and it's easier than using a browser. And to me, if I'm on my phone, that means I'm out of the house, and speed and easy are important.
I'm trying to get them to build in better comment controls for us, for the editors so we can kill spam and crappy comments quicker. Because you're right, it's fast as hell. So cool. So yeah, go download that if you haven't and leave a review. And if you've left a review, leave another one. Go back and it's even more star. I want stars. No, just
make a different Gmail and download it twice.
No, don't do that. Actually, that was something else I learned in this whole process is when they're counting downloads, like they're not counting every time I download this app on one of my phones and every time I get another phone. That doesn't count as a separate download. So that was good to know.
That's smart.
Yeah. Really cool. Impressed with the developer console. You guys want to do some emails and we'll get out of here?
Let's do some emails.
Woohoo. Mark writes, this is in response to one of the questions about a budget app from last week. I use Easy Envelope Budget Aid, EEBA, which uses the envelope system, imports Quicken files, and does not require bank login. Thus, it's more secure, it's cross-platform, and has a web version as well. Cool. Cool.
Yep.
Good feedback.
Good stuff.
Who wants to do the next one? Anyone? You guys got it open?
I got it. Adam writes, I've got a question about SD cards and Jelly Bean. I can't seem to locate the original issues or drawbacks of how Jelly Bean uses or doesn't use the external SD card. Jelly Bean doesn't. And the way SD cards work on Android, they use what's called a symlink. It's a symbolic link. Think of like a shortcut that you make on Windows. And that's all up to the person building the phone and customizing the software to incorporate into Android. That's why none of the Nexus phones that or Android phones that have an SD card slot, they never got Jelly Bean. Google never had to write it in. So that's all handled by the vendor.
Okay.
Philip writes, I recently switched from a Windows phone to an HTC One. So far I'm loving it, but there's one big thing that I miss. Baked into Windows Phone is an audio SMS over Bluetooth support. Basically, when Bluetooth is connected and I get an SMS, the phone will audibly, through my car speakers, ask if I want it read or ignored. Then after reading the SMS, it'll ask if I want to respond or not. I can speak my message and it'll read it back to me and I can tell it to send, all hands free. I've used a few apps that have similar functionality, but they all either lack the seamless hands-free use, will only read my SMS, or will just send an auto, I'm in the car response. Any suggestions?
Oh, it's been a long time since I've played with any of that.
Yeah, I don't text in the car. When I'm driving, I just ignore my phone.
I don't.
So I'm the wrong guy.
That's the
right. Now, if my wife's driving and I've been drinking, that's another story.
I don't know. Anyone has any? I haven't used these in a long time. It's probably about time we do a roundup, huh? So if you guys have any suggestions, email us. If you have any suggestions for Philip to do that. But the other answer is, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I'm still trying real hard, and I'm doing a lot better, just leave the phone in your pocket. Even if you have, even with Bluetooth, just, and I get it. The idea is to not touch it, but just be careful, guys. That's my point. End of speech, end of preach. Andrew, do the next one.
Edward writes, I'm an iPhone user and considering jumping to Android as my main driver later this year. One issue I have is with uninstalling apps, leaving quote-unquote junk files and folders behind. Is there any way to automate the cleanup?
I guess he's talking about stuff on the SD card or stuff on internal storage, not
the internal stuff that you can't get rid of. The internal storage is wiped unless you use a special switch when you uninstall it. But the SD card, it's not. And I don't think...
I've noticed in some cases that there would be apps that handle pictures or something like that or have backups to internal storage or something will maybe leave a folder or two behind. And, after a year, you'll have a couple megabytes of random little files here and there. But I don't think it's I haven't noticed anyways it being rampant with apps leaving.
I think with the amount of storage on most Android devices, it's not a huge issue anyway. I mean, it's you never want to have files just lying around that aren't doing anything. It's wasted space. But they're so small that it's inconsequential, really.
I don't think it's affecting performance anyways.
Well, no. It shouldn't. It's the files it leaves behind are... on user rewritable storage, like your SD partition or your actual SD card, and your operating system doesn't run from there. It just reads it.
Right.
Cool. Last one, Jimmy writes, I'm curious what you all think about Google's acquisition of Waze. I keep wondering how they will implement Waze into maps. Could be a new map layer. It could be combined with Latitude. Yeah, we forgot to talk about that last week, actually. If you haven't heard, excuse me, they bought Waze for, what was it, $1 billion and change? I don't remember. No, it wasn't that much.
Something like that.
It was a lot of money. And Waze does kind of crowdsourced traffic data, which, I mean, Google can... You think of it as like active traffic data. So you run across a speed trap, you get into a traffic jam, pop up the app and, you know, hit the button and it tells the service and everybody can see it. Google has done sort of passive traffic, I'll call it, you know, where they can look at your phone and, you know, be able to tell, ooh, hey, it looks like he's in the car, but he just slowed way down. Maybe he's crawling. All right. So he's not at the location. Look at where you are. All right. You're on the interstate. So it's probably a traffic jam. Right, and that's where you get the red, yellow, green traffic from. Mm-hmm. At the basic level, this is going to mean better traffic integration, right? Whether it's...
And they've already said they're going to keep Waze as a separate part and just... They're going to probably feed that information into maps and just have that as a separate layer, which will then feed into other stuff, probably like Google Now.
Right.
Right, I don't see them trying to change Google Navigation where I can report an accident or report a slowdown or a speed trap. But it sure would be nice if I could get data from people that are using Waze and display that right in Google Navigation. That would be really, really slick.
Right. For Google, Waze can really just be a pool of very active users that are, you know, it's kind of gamified and all that stuff to try to get more people to put in their own actively putting in data. And for Google, that's just a huge data bucket of people that want to give them additional data above and beyond just using navigation while they're in the car. And it wouldn't be very smart of them to kill off Waze for that reason alone.
Well, imagine if you're driving down the street and on your Google Glass, it tells you there's a speed trap 300 meters on the right.
Yeah.
Bing.
Could be.
Then you get into a fiery crash because this little notification went off here. And
It makes your Twitter minimize, so you have to focus on the road, or I don't know.
And then they pull you over because it's...
There's like all kind of ways that they can... Waze. That was slick. Yeah. There's all kind of ways they can use this data, but they all will require that Waze still be a standalone product. And I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think that is a fairly triumphant return. Does anyone want to volunteer to stick a fork in it and wrap it up? Or shall I do it myself?
Take her home, Phil.
All right, be sure to email us, podcast@androidcentral.com. We will get the voicemails going up eventually. We've had some technical problems on that. And we talked about it last time. We're still looking at switching systems, so we're working out some bugs there. So thanks for hanging in there. In the meantime, email us, podcast@androidcentral.com. You can get us all on Twitter. You can get us all on Google+. Just search our names. It's the easiest thing to do. As we are every week, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. You can get them at 888-468-6158. Shopandroid.com. A whole bunch of new cases coming in. Bunch of Galaxy S4 stuff for all you cats and kittens getting new phones out there. You can leave us a voicemail. Again, we'll read it eventually if you want, but don't leave us a voicemail. I'm just going to edit that out. Hi, boys and girls. How are you? And I think that's it. Do you love how I just...
Stick a fork in it.
We'll stick a fork in it. I love how I write the script and I still read it without thinking. That's awesome. It's kind of funny, actually. That's a good way to end. It's Friday. We're done. Jerry, Alex, thank you. Chat room, thank you, guys. Everybody at home later, thank you too. We're out.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Later, guys.
say thank you like everybody else.
Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome, Andrew.
Bye.